And now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Four of America's top news reporters are ready for this unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Almost exactly a year ago, the United States and Great Britain started negotiating with the Soviet Union on the banning of nuclear testing. These negotiations are still going on, but settlement seems to be a long way off. Our guest today is Mr. Thomas E. Murray, who has attended some of the Geneva sessions as a consultant to the Joint Congressional Committee on Atomic Energy. Over the years, Mr. Murray has played a leading role in the controversy over atomic testing. He was strongly opposed to the administration's action of last October in suspending tests without waiting for action by the Soviet Union. Mr. Murray served for 7 years as a member of the Atomic Energy Commission, winding up his service in 1957. He's an engineer and a manufacturer with more than 200 patents to his credit. He has received many awards and honorary degrees for his long public service in his home city of New York, his state, and in his nation. And now seated around the press table ready to interview Mr. Murray are Richard Wilson of the Des Moines Register and Minneapolis Tribune, John Finney of the New York Times, Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Mr. Murray, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Murray, we've spent a year negotiating with the Soviet Union at Geneva on the question of banning nuclear tests. What do you think the United States and the free world has to gain by signing an agreement with the Soviet Union to end nuclear tests?
At the present time, I don't see any advantage to the United States in signing such an agreement.
Well, do you think, then, that we ought to pick our delegates up and come home?
Not necessarily. I think that we could continue negotiations, continue to talk. I am always in favor of trying to work out some arrangements that would be satisfactory to all parties and at the same time keep national security in mind.
Well, would you be willing at this time to sign any agreement with the Soviet Union to halt underground tests, for example, regardless of what inspection system they agreed to?
I would not.
What about the proposals made by Mr. McMillan?
Well, the McMillan proposals are the ones that are being given great emphasis today in Geneva. The McMillan proposal, I think, if it was adopted, would give us a figment of an inspection system, a token inspection system, without an actual inspection effective system.
Mr. Childs.
Mr. Murray, I'd like to carry Mr. Spivak's question a little bit farther and quote your language in your report in May to the committee when you said that a complete stoppage of nuclear tests would be disastrous in the present state of our nuclear armament programs. Is this because the Soviet Russia is so far ahead of us in atomic armaments?
It stems from two reasons. One is the Soviet Union may be ahead of us in atomic armament. There's nothing that I know of that indicates that the Soviets are not up to us and ahead of us, particularly in the small weapons field. I made that statement because I have been advocating and still advocate a balanced nuclear stockpile, a rational nuclear stockpile. Stockpile that would not only envisage weapons of mass destruction and weapons of annihilation, but small nuclear weapons that could be used to carry on limited nuclear war.
Well, it's also been said, Mr. Murray, that we have failed where the Russians have succeeded in getting the small nuclear warhead that will fit the intercontinental ballistic missile. Do you believe this is true?
We have not necessarily failed in this area. We have made some progress to get a small warhead for a intercontinental ballistic missile. But we have made very little progress in the small weapons spectrum, in the small weapons field.
And that includes in the ICBM, the warhead that is essential for the ICBM.
I am not too familiar with the different kinds of warheads that will be used on the ends of ICBMs or IRBMs. But we have warheads in stockpile that could be used.
Well, now, you followed this for 7 years on the commission and for the balance of the time with the committee. Would you say that this lag, the U.S. lag, was because of the economy and budget balancing policies of the Eisenhower administration?
I think this lag is due to two things. One is I think that technology has taken over, plus the budgetary considerations. I think back in 1954, I think it was, when the so-called New Look came into existence, that was the time that situation started to change. And that is the time that the policy was developed for massive retaliation. It was the time that massive retaliation was the main objective and still is, as far as I know, the main objective of this country.
Mr. Finney.
Mr. Murray, I'd like to go into the troublesome moral issues involved in nuclear armament and disarmament. You're known as one of the leading Catholic laymen in this nation. Do you see any conflict between your position on testing and the Pope's latest encyclical urging the leaders of the world to try every approach to achieve peace and world unity?
I don't see any inconsistency, Mr. Finney.
You would favor, however, continued nuclear armament.
I would favor continued nuclear tests in the small areas, in the small fields. And when I talk about small weapons, of course, I mean weapons in the range of 1 kiloton and fractional kiloton weapons.
Well, now, Mr. Murray, you've been talking about these small weapons now for several years. Don't we have them?
We do not. We have some small weapons, and we have some tactical weapons, but we haven't the tens of thousands of weapons that I have been urging and other people have been urging to put into stockpile.
Well, then, I wonder if you could tell me this, from your knowledge on the commission and on the serving as consultant to the committee. What proportion of our weapons material is going into the big strategic weapons, and what proportion into the small tactical weapons?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, and it's a question, even though I had the answer, perhaps I couldn't give it to you today on account of secrecy. But the great emphasis up to the hardtack series has been to develop more efficient big weapons and bigger weapons.
And well, Mr. Murray, how in the world is the public going to consider this problem of small weapons if we're going to have so much secrecy around? Is there any reason for secrecy on this point?
I don't believe so. I think that the difficulty that we're in today is the fact that we haven't taken the public into our confidence. We've had arguments and discussions in other fields of armament, in conventional armaments. We've had arguments, as you remember, of lack of ammunition in Korea and lack of ammunition in other areas. And I believe that this is an area that should be well advertised and well publicized. And the public should have some knowledge of what the situation is today.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Murray, in many quarters in the government, I think there has been a feeling for some time that an atomic war was probably impossible. In any event, it was not an effective instrument of national policy because of mutual destruction which would be inflicted by the large bombs. Are you arguing that a nuclear war is a quite likely thing? Is probable?
An all-out nuclear war? No. I do not believe that in any stretch of the imagination that we're going to face an all-out nuclear war. I don't think that the intention of the Soviets to carry on such a war. They're not stockpiling weapons to carry on wars of mass destruction. They don't stockpile weapons as we seem to think we stockpile weapons to prevent war and to wage peace. They stock weapons for use.
Then you are assuming that there may be a nuclear war using small weapons, is that right?
I have no doubt that there will be.
You have no doubt that there will be such a war?
I think so.
Would you care to place a time limit on it?
No, I don't think so. I think that the question that the Soviets recognize, as we do, what the results of an all-out nuclear war would be, the devastation and the havoc and the destruction and perhaps the finding ourselves both in the same grave. They have no intention of putting an end to history, and that's what an all-out nuclear war would be.
Well, how can you use the smaller weapons without having instantly the risk of the use of the larger weapons in desperation?
There's no definite answer, categorical answer that I could give to that. I suppose the question is directed to the fact that any use of nuclear weapons will lead to bigger and bigger uses of weapons and eventually to all-out war. I don't think that contingency will occur. I don't think that the Soviets, realizing what an all-out nuclear war means, would ever dream of carrying on an all-out nuclear war against the United States.
But your point is this correct, that if we were to have a limited nuclear war using the small weapons as you forecast, that we're not prepared for it?
We are not prepared for it today, and we ought to have that flexibility. I can say that the use of small weapons would not lead to an all-out war, neither can anyone say it with certainty that it will or it will not. But I say this country should have the flexibility to fight any kind and all kinds of nuclear wars.
Mr. Spivak.
When President Eisenhower recently refused to rule out the possibility of a nuclear war if the Soviet tries to push us out of Berlin, do you think he was thinking in terms of small weapons or thinking in terms of the deterrent H-bomb?
I don't know what he was thinking about, Mr. Spivak.
Well, do you think that we have... What I'm trying to get out is this. Do you think... If you think we do not have enough small weapons to conduct a limited war, then he couldn't... He must know this, too. Then he couldn't have been thinking of a war of limited nature.
Not a nuclear war of limited nature, no.
And you still believe that if a small war were started, that it would not definitely result in an H-bomb war?
I do.
If atomic weapons are used?
It's a possibility, but I don't think a probability.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it is possible for one nation to knock another nation out with H-bombs without really destroying itself through fallout?
Well, it all depends, of course, how much... material is used, how many megatons is used to destroy another nation.
Well, let's take the number of bombs that this recent Holyfield Committee brought out, 263 bombs, I think. They thought that about 50 million people or 49 million people in this country would be destroyed. Could the Russians, for example, drop enough bombs to destroy 50 million people without setting up a fallout that would destroy them?
Oh, yes, I think so.
You think they could?
I think in those figures they could, yes. I think they would get the results of their attack on us, but it wouldn't be, of course, in proportion to the result that we would get.
Mr. Childs.
Mr. Murray, as you know, 4 years ago there were maneuvers in Louisiana involving small atomic weapons. This was a test run, Operation Sagebrush, and it was shown that 12 states would have been devastated, cities partially destroyed, and the surviving inhabitants completely affected by radioactivity. In the light of this, how do you argue the possibility of limited atomic war?
Well, I argue because limited atomic war is the only rational war in the nuclear age that can be carried out today.
Well, but would any country want to have a limited war fought in its territory if this is the consequence, as was shown in Operation Sagebrush?
No country that I know would like to have a limited war fought in their country, no.
Well, then, but what I'm
getting
at...
But that doesn't necessarily lead to the fact that an all-out war is inevitable.
But you would accept the consequences of a limited atomic war, even though, as Operation Sagebrush showed, they're pretty devastating.
I'm not too familiar with the Sagebrush results, but I think that I would.
You believe this is a possibility in the world today, that kind of war?
An all-out war?
No, a limited
atomic war. A limited nuclear war? Absolutely. And I'm not alone, of course, in that opinion, as you know.
No, I know. Well, take the situation in Berlin, where we have the greatest crisis in the world today. Do you think the situation in Berlin is likely to develop into a limited atomic war?
I don't know. I have no way to judge that situation, of course. Depends on the various actions. The president, of course, has ruled out a ground war in Berlin. And he said that I don't want to misquote him, but in effect, he said that the only war that we could face today is an all-out atomic war, and that's unthinkable.
But a limited...
So therefore, we're dropped back to conventional weapons, I assume.
A limited atomic war in Germany would devastate the whole German nation.
Not necessarily. Oh, no.
Well, I mean, 12 states in this country...
Limited atomic war is a war that can be limited. It can be discriminating. Weapons can be built and should be stockpiled to limit the devastation, for instance, from one bomb to, say, a square mile.
Well, I was just judging on Operation Sagebrush.
Well, lots of things have happened since Operation Sagebrush.
Mr. Murray, you suggested that future testing be conducted underground. Can you suggest a suitable location for that kind of testing?
Well, they could. Testing of this nature could be done almost anywhere.
Without danger of contamination?
Without danger of contamination, yes.
Do you think that we can learn all that we need to learn by confining the test to underground?
I do.
Mr. Finney, I would like to clarify one comment you made earlier. You said that the Russians were not stockpiling weapons of mass destruction.
No, I didn't mean to say that. I want to correct that.
That's what I understood you to say.
The Russians have, and without doubt, weapons of mass destruction.
Now, getting back to the test ban issue, you've accused the administration of following a policy of retreat on the test ban issue. It's a very serious charge. I wonder if you can tell us how and where and when the administration has retreated on this.
Well, I think I could point up the Geneva situation that's happened and has occurred within the last year. Our proposition to Geneva when we first went there, that we would have a moratorium for 1 year, but that moratorium was going to be dependent on other things happening, such as the establishment and the installation of an adequate inspection system, such as improvements or developments in disarmament. We have dropped those last 2 points, and that is one area of retreat. A second area of retreat is the consideration of the McMillan proposal. The McMillan proposal is one of the worst instances of retreat that I know in this whole nuclear test picture.
Well, now, if you were general here and to stop this policy of retreat, what would you do now?
The thing I would do would be to advocate to the administration that it continues a policy of retreat, but in the other direction. And that is to go back to the President Eisenhower's April 13th proposal that the first step and the only logical step that should be taken is to limit the test ban to atmospheric tests. We've had 9 or 10 years experience in that field, and we are certain that there's no danger to the United States security and national security if such a proposition was adopted.
And continue tests in all other realms.
Until such time as we can develop, in conjunction with the Russians and others, effective means to detect other types of explosions, such as underground explosions.
Well, now, what would you do October 31st, coming October 31st, when the moratorium runs out, and we are presuming we have not reached agreement by then? Would you resume tests?
I surely would. I think it's important to the national security. And I feel, if I may go on, if tests aren't resumed, I am fearful that this nation will become a second-rate nuclear nation.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Murray, have you presented these views to President Eisenhower?
Not the most recent views, no, but I've been in communication with President Eisenhower on this question of tests for 5 or 6 years.
He appears to take a contrary view.
His action in establishing the unilateral moratorium is evidence of that.
Evidence that he would take a contrary view. Would you, as I understand it, you are opposed to a continued moratorium on tests because you want to develop these smaller weapons. Would you describe what it is you wish to develop, you wish to see developed, what kind of weapons specifically in detail, since you don't feel there's any real issue of secrecy here?
Well, we have the large weapons, and as many generals and admirals have stated, we have enough large weapons to destroy Russia many times over. I think the emphasis should be put on the lower end of the spectrum, the question of small nuclear weapons, so that we could have an adequate stockpile to meet any contingency that might arise.
What kind of weapons in detail?
In detail, I can't give you the details naturally, but I tell you, I've recommended, and others have recommended, that we stockpile tens of thousands of these small weapons.
Small enough to be fired from a bazooka?
It might be fired at the so-called Davy Crockett idea, that it could almost be fired as a bazooka, yes.
Not from a rifle, actually.
Not from a rifle, no.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Murray, are you sure that we don't have these small weapons? I believe that the administration said 2 years ago that we were developing and we were manufacturing a great many of these small weapons.
Well, you'd have to be a little more specific when you say developing and a great number. I claim that we haven't the tens of thousands of small weapons that I've been urging for some time.
Well, do you assume this or do you know that?
I know it.
What do you think we've gained? We've stopped testing since October 31st. What do you think the world has gained by that? And what do you think the world has lost by that?
I think our political gains, to be a little more specific on the question, the political gains, I think, have been zero. The losses that we perhaps have incurred are maybe very, very serious. We have shut down for our test program for 8 months. We test, and we intend to hold it down for at least a year. I personally don't believe at the end, when October 1st comes around, that we will ever resume testing, unless some real dramatic action is taken.
Do you think the situation is serious enough so that we ought to resume testing at once our underground weapon?
Absolutely. Let me try to explain that a little more in detail. As you recall, we had what we called the A-bomb development. I call that the first generation of weapons. We moved in 1952 to what I call a second generation of weapons, the hydrogen generation. It was thousands of times more destructive than the A-bomb. Now I'm looking forward to a third generation of weapons. Not big weapons, but weapons that would be discriminatory. Personnel weapons. And that is the type of war, a nuclear war, that could be fought and could be fought legitimately in the future.
Mr. Childs.
Both on this program today and in your report, Mr. Murray, you've talked about the public ignorance of these matters and the tragedy that the public doesn't know about this nuclear debate. Do you put some of the blame for this on the former chairman of the commission, Mr. Louis Strauss, whom you had so many arguments with?
No, I don't want to direct all the blame on him. I think the National Security Council and the administration generally is to blame for this.
But you think there has been excessive secrecy?
I do.
What would you do about that, Mr. Murray?
I would try to do everything I could to educate the public in this nuclear field. One of the suggestions I made, and I made some years ago, was that we ought to take 10,000 or 20,000 people out of Aniwetok and have a summit meeting out at Aniwetok. The public ought to know the position that we're in today in the small weapons field.
And you'd take the secrecy label off a lot of this stuff, would you?
I surely would.
Mr. Finney.
Mr. Murray, to your knowledge, has the Strategic Air Command ever determined how many people would be killed by fallout throughout the world in an all-out attack?
I don't have that information, Mr. Finney.
Have they ever told you in
No.
the briefing?
Mr. Wilson.
You've made a very serious charge, Mr. Murray. Who is to blame for this?
Well, I don't think you can pin the blame on any special, particular person. If I was putting the blame on any place, I would blame it on technology and the Bureau of the Budget. For example, a short discussion might illustrate this. Some time ago, I was discussing, for instance, the effect of dropping a 20-megaton bomb.
Mr. Murray, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to interrupt. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Murray.
Monitor's thanks to the Meet the Press guest, Thomas C. Murray, consultant to the Joint Congressional Committee on Atomic Energy. Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence Spivak. Now, a moment for a little story. Once there was a farmer with two sons. When he died, he told the sons their legacy was in the fields. The young men thought there was treasure buried there, so they dug and dug. They found no treasure, but they did have a fine crop. Next year, they repeated the process. But after a few years, the brothers realized what their father had done. He hadn't left them money. He had left them a way of making their own money by cultivating their fields. Don't you agree there really could not be a wiser legacy? For the same reason, it makes good sense to contribute for tools to care.